Welcome once again to our program, Salvation History, the Old Testament, the story of the creation, fall, the beginning of the redemption of humankind. Our guest today, again, as usual, is Ron Eldred, who teaches religion and history at John Paul II Catholic High. I'm your host, Monsignor Larry Moran. I'm the chaplain at Carmelite Convent just south of Terre Haute at the entrance of Allendale. Ron, we've just finished about talking about the Holy of Holies and the Ark of the Covenant, and we got to Moses being on the mountaintop to receive the Ten Commandments. So perhaps we could continue there from our series last time.
Yes, this was the I believe the second time he went up on the mountain, and at least on two or three occasions the people had approved the covenant that God had made with them. And of course we're going to find out here today that they really break that covenant in a big way within a very short time. While Moses was up on top of the mountain, the people got very impatient. They were tired of waiting for him to come down. He was up there for 40 days. So while Moses was up there, they pressured Moses' brother Aaron, who was in charge in his absence, to allow them to build a golden calf to worship out, made out of the golden earrings of the people. They had to melt them down, you know, and then hammering them into the shape of a calf, a small calf, probably about.
And in a little bit, we're going to talk about why a calf.
Yeah, it was small, you know. It was probably maybe a foot high or a couple feet high. It wasn't a big thing. And not only that, but Aaron had an altar built before the calf and allowed the Israelites to make offerings with which to worship God. Well, there's Moses up on top of the mountain, and God warns him, what's going on down there before he came down, from the top of the mountain. And God was so angry with the people for their faithlessness that he planned to destroy them and to replace them with Moses' descendants. In other words, the faithless people had broken their covenant that they had recently made with God. And this has been called the original sin of the Israelites. However, Moses pleaded to God not to do this, saying, quote, "Why, O Lord, should your wrath blaze up against your own people, whom you brought out of the land of Egypt with such power and with so strong a hand? Why should the Egyptians say, with evil intent he brought them out, that he might kill them in the mountains and exterminate them from the face of the earth? Let your blazing wrath die down. Relent in punishing your people." End of quote. What Moses was in effect doing was telling God that the Egyptians and other peoples would think he was a weak God if he couldn't even control his own people. Then Moses pleaded further by saying, quote, "Remember your servants Abraham, Isaac, and Israel," or Jacob, "and how you swore to them by your own self, saying, I will make them your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. And all this land that I have promised, I will give your descendants as their perpetual heritage." So the Lord relented in the punishment he had threatened to inflict on his people. This story is told in Exodus 9 through 14, actually, you know, several chapters there.
Okay. Well, then, Ron, what happened after Moses got down from the mountain, knowing it's trouble down below?
Well, when he got down from the mountain, he saw things for himself. He got angry. He got so angry, in fact, that he threw the two stone tablets on the ground and smashed them to bits. As Scott Hahn says of this event, quote, "Since God had already prepared him for the golden calf, what Moses saw must have been much worse than simple idolatry. But the smashed tablets were a good symbol of the covenant that Israel had broken." And that ends that quote. Well, then Moses had the golden calf destroyed by having it ground down into powder, which was then scattered on the water that the Israelites were forced to drink. And then after chastising Aaron for failing to control the people while he was gone, Moses called for help in restoring order. And the Levites responded to his call, the tribe of Levi, one of the 12 sons of Jacob, or Israel. Of course, this is 400 years after the time of course, Jacob or Israel, as this tribe grew in a fairly, you know, large size during that 400-year period while in Egypt. And he told the Levites to arm themselves and go through the camp, killing all who were caught sinning. And it's recorded that they killed about 3,000 persons. That story is told in Exodus 31 through 33.
Well, what were the people doing that they deserved death?
Well, apparently the Israelites were engaging in some sort of fertility religion, which were common in that part of the world at that time, especially among the Canaanite peoples. The worship of fertility gods was a way people tried to control the forces of nature. As one source says, quote, "The gods were woven into all the cycles of human life, particularly the cycle of life, death, and rebirth." For farmers, this was an immediate issue, since each year they experienced the death of vegetation in winter and its resurrection in spring. Farmers needed to predict and possibly control this cycle, which could mean the difference between a good and a bad harvest, end of quote. The Canaanites, which included many of the different peoples in this region, the region of the Promised Land, had a special devotion to a god called Baal, also known as Moloch.
Mm.
And his consort or wife or girlfriend, whatever you want to call her, was Astarte, also known as Azareth, the gods who control the resurrection of nature in springtime. Baal was a god of rain, thunder, fertility, and agriculture, and the lord of heaven. Astarte was connected with fertility, sexuality, and war. And if these gods were not properly worshipped, the spring rains wouldn't come. At least the people believed that they wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
The cycle of the seasons, therefore, absorbed worshippers of the fertility gods. And the objective of these religions was to control the weather for favorable conditions to plant and to harvest crops. One source has written that, quote, "The worship of Azareth, Anat, and Baal was especially important after the harvest, when the summer drought had baked the soil hard and crops had to be replanted. It was essential that the first rains of winter fall on the land to soften the sun-baked soil for plowing and sowing the new crop," end of quote. Religious practices of these religions often involve human sacrifices to placate the gods. In other words, a sacrifice is giving something back to God in reparation, in thanksgiving or praise or something of that sort. And one of the most valuable things, of course, you could give to God was a human being, especially one of your own children or an infant. So it's kind of logical in a sense, although, of course, God considered this to be evil, and he made that known, of course, when Abraham was about to slay his own son and sacrifice him to God, and the angel of the Lord stayed his hand, and then in the nearby bush was a ram, you know, caught with in his horns.
Don't some people suggest that Abraham mistakenly thought, because this was going on all around him, giving what the pagans considered the best to God, their children, that he thought that he had to give the best to God, and that's why he got into that situation?
Yeah, he didn't. He thought he was following God's, you know, command, and which I guess he was, but at the same time, God was really going to show him that this was something evil, and he did not want the Israelites to practice human sacrifice.
And wasn't Moloch especially the god of child sacrifice?
Oh, yes. In fact, even today, you know, the pro-life movement always calls the abortion industry, you know, the worshippers of the god of Moloch.
Okay. Because actually they would give their children to be burned to the god.
Sometimes they would throw them in a fiery furnace or something of that sort.
Horrible. But no more horrible than what's going on today.
Oh, sure. They also usually involve some form of temple prostitution. And the main reason God wanted the Israelites to stay apart from the Canaanites and other peoples was because of their worship of various fertility gods. And his
people seemed to be so common, why it was so attractive.
Yes. And they were tempted to worship these gods throughout their history. And apparently those killed by the Levites, that 3,000 I mentioned a while ago, were caught breaking the 6th and 9th commandments in some way or another. Thou shalt not commit adultery or fornicate or that type of thing. And so as the Levites armed, led by Joshua, if I recall right, as they went around, they caught some people out in the bushes somewhere, and they did. They killed them.
Okay.
And so altogether, they killed about 3,000 people. The Bible doesn't tell you really clearly what was going on, but that's what was going on.
Obviously, something more than just having made the golden calf.
Yes.
Okay. Well, and wasn't that the great attraction of the rituals of the pagans, because it involved fertility and prostitution rites?
Yes, they call this, you know, sacred prostitution or something of that sort. We'll have occasion to come back to that subject a little later, so I'll tell a little bit more about that.
All right, well,
at that time,
why did the Israelites choose to worship a golden calf? I think we all know about a little bit about them. They worship the golden calf in the desert. But why did Aaron decide to make a golden calf?
The worship of the sacred calf or the bull was pretty common throughout the ancient world. I understand that the bull was associated with the moon in Mesopotamia and Egypt, and the sun in India. In Egypt, the bull was worshipped as Apis, the embodiment of Ptah and later of Osiris. Ptah was sort of a creator god and was associated with the reincarnation. And Osiris was the god of the afterlife, the underworld, and of the dead. Apparently, a lot of the Israelites had been involved with bull worship while in Egypt. So they were simply reviving that practice when Moses was on the mountaintop. So it wasn't just something that accidentally came about. They were reverting back to some of them to their old ways. One biblical scholar has said of this matter, quote, "When the sacred author tells us that the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play, he means they indulged in all kinds of immoral celebrations, just as did an Egyptian statue of Apis depict from the 18th century." Then he goes on to say that Aaron might have been trying to save some appearance of loyalty to God by saying that the statue represented Yahweh, the true God, but the people were in fact worshiping a fertility god like the ones they had known in Egypt. In other words, the people had completely renounced the covenant that they just made with God no more than, you know, a month and a half before that, at least on a couple of occasions, and also renounced the moral laws that went with it. And they had turned around and gone back to their old Egyptian ways, and they pretended that it was this bull god who had brought them out of Egypt.
Okay. Well, Moses again goes up to Mount Sinai the second time. What about that? What's he going up the second time for?
Well, God told Moses to do this. Told him to cut two stone tablets like the former, that I may write on them the commandments which were on the former tablets that he broke. That you wrote. I'm quoting here now. "Get ready for tomorrow morning when you are to go to Mount Sinai and there present yourself to me on the top of the mountain." This is the story is told in Genesis 24. Moses did as he was told, of course, and went up to the mountain again, and God appeared to him in a cloud and made a new covenant with him and the Israelites. God said to Moses, quote, before the eyes of all your people, I will work such marvels as have never been wrought in any nation anywhere in the world, so that this people among whom you live may see how awe-inspiring are the deeds which I, the Lord, will do at your side. But you, on your part, must keep the commandments I am giving you today. This ends that quote. Then after giving Moses the commandments, God told him to write down these words, for in accordance with them I have made a covenant with you and with Israel. And afterwards Moses stayed there with the Lord for 40 days and 40 nights without eating any food or drinking any water. And he wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, that is, the Ten Commandments. So Moses stays up on the mountain 40 days both times, it seems to appear.
And he again renews the covenant.
Yes.
Okay. Well, what happened when Moses got down from the mountain the second time?
Well, at least this time the people were obeying themselves, minding themselves. And when he gets down with the second set of stone tablets, his face was still radiant from having been in God's presence. And when Aaron the Israelites saw this, they were afraid to go near him. So Moses called them to come near him and told them what God had said to him while he was on the mountain. And after he finished talking to them, he covered his face with a veil. Afterwards, he uncovered his face whenever he was in God's presence and covered it again whenever he was in the presence of the Israelites. This story is told in Exodus 34.
So that's why he was wearing the veil, because of the glory of God was shining in his face.
Yes.
Okay. Well, nonetheless, things were never the same between God and the Israelites afterwards, were they?
No, they weren't. The Israelites' fall from grace was mainly due to their original sin that we referred to a while ago, worshiping a false god, the golden calf. So they lost much of their special status with God because of this violation of their vows, their covenant with him. The children of Israel, under the supervision of Moses, built the tabernacle after this. And because they had remained faithful to God when Moses was on Mount Sinai, the tribe of Levi were consecrated priests and put in charge of transporting and assembling and disassembling the tabernacle during the 40 years in the desert wilderness and afterwards in the land of Canaan. As we said on several occasions during the series, the Levites were descendants of Levi, the third son of Jacob by Leah. In place of land, in other words, when the land was divided up later on by Joshua, when they conquered the land of Canaan, or the promised land, in place of land, they were to receive tithes and other landed property from the other tribes. They were given a few cities also. And Aaron and his sons, they were Levites. Moses was a Levite. Of course, Aaron and his sister Miriam, they were Levites. Aaron and his sons, they were chosen for the high priesthood. This story is told in Exodus 8. While the subordinate offices of the priesthood and other public services were assigned to the rest of the tribe. During the time of Jesus, there was around, 20,000 priests. I've got the exact number somewhere. And these priests were divided up into divisions. And then during the year, not all the priests stayed in Jerusalem at the temple. They would only go to the temple for a period of a week, four or five maybe times a year. And the different Levites, some of them were guards in the temple, some of them were sacristans, some of them took care of the treasury, some of them played instruments like in an orchestra. Some of them were in a choir and sung the liturgies and things of that sort. So, and some of them were like janitors. Because only the Levites, you see, were permitted in the tabernacle when the tabernacle was built, and only the Levites, of course, or the priesthood, including the higher priesthood, the high priesthood, the chief priest, and then, of course, all the rest of the Levites. Only they were the only ones that were allowed in the temple proper or in the tabernacle.
Okay, then, Ron, what happened to the idea that all of the Israelite males were to be a nation of priests?
God's original covenant with Israel, in the words of one biblical scholar, quote, would have made the whole nation a kingdom of priests. Every father would have been a priest in his own house. Every firstborn son would have been dedicated to God. Every family would have known God personally, end of quote. But after their fall from his grace, God created a separate priesthood from the tribe of Levi. In other words, the firstborn sons, who were the head of the families, lost their position as the priest who made the sacrifices for the family.
Okay.
Furthermore, the Israelites were to be required to live apart from all of the peoples and to follow very rigorous purity and dietary laws, which we will look at in some later sessions of this series. Moreover, the Levitical priesthood was required to sacrifice animals on a regular basis to atone for the people's sins. And they were to sacrifice the very same animals, bulls, goats, sheep, that they had worshipped in Egypt, and remind them of their former idolatry. And each time these animals were sacrificed, it symbolized killing the false Egyptian gods that they had come to worship in Egypt, and we're always slipping back into all the time over their history, as we'll find out as we go along. And as we indicated, the bull was a sacred animal in Egypt, so when the Israelites worshipped the golden calf, they were simply resorting to the type of worship they had practiced in Egypt. And a golden bull was found in the tomb of the young pharaoh, Tutankhamun. And because they continue to remain unfaithful to God, Israel has been characterized as a harlot who had committed adultery in the Old Testament. You find this especially in Hosea. You find it, God considered his people to be his bride, whom he loved dearly. And when they were unfaithful to him, he considered them as adulterous people who had broken their vows. And you'll find this in Jeremiah, you'll find this in Isaiah, Hosea, and in other places in the Old Testament.
Okay, that was a continual problem, the Israelites falling away, even though they kept promising, we're going to keep the covenant. Well, after their fall from God's grace, always breaking the covenant, getting into pagan religions, how were the Israelites able to retain their privilege as God's chosen people?
From now on, every aspect of their lives was going to be bound by strict and precise rules. Rules that would tell them what they could eat, even how men were to wear their beards, and 100 other detailed matters. We'll look in some of these in some later sessions, what some of these kind of laws were. Scott Hahn says that, quote, the laws that God gave Israel were different from human laws. They were meant to do more than just keep order. Even though God had brought them out of slavery in Egypt, the people had shown that they were still slaves to Egypt's gods. They were not yet holy enough to bring God's message to the nations. End of quote. The institution of the Levites and the priesthood was God's first step to insulate the Israelites from him. In other words, the people were not deserving of having that close a personal relationship with God anymore. From now on, the Levitical priesthood would mediate between him and the people, not the father, you know, not the firstborn, the head of the family, who would act as a priest. The Catechism of the Catholic Church states of this matter, quote, the chosen people was constituted by God as a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. But within the people of Israel, God chose one of the 12 tribes, that of Levi, to set it apart for a liturgical service. God himself is its inheritance. A special rite consecrated the beginnings of the priesthood of the Old Covenant. The priests are appointed to act on behalf of men in relationship to God to offer gifts and sacrifices for sins. instituted, I'm still quoting the Catechism, instituted to proclaim the Word of God and to restore communion with God by sacrifices and prayer. This priesthood, nevertheless, remains powerless to bring about salvation, needing to repeat its sacrifices ceaselessly and being unable to achieve a definitive sanctification, which only the sacrifice of Christ would accomplish. There's a lot in that little quote there. A lot of theology is packed into that. What really saying is that the sacrifices of the Old Testament did not earn sanctifying grace. That took an infinite sacrifice of Christ himself, of course, to do that. Jews were saved not by making sacrifices. They were saved by believing in the promises of the Messiah and things of that sort. That's how they earned sanctifying grace. In other words, the sacraments, the Jews didn't have any sacraments. They didn't have any liturgical practices, any ceremonies that would, in itself, would produce sanctifying grace, as, of course, the sacraments do. We'll talk more about that when we get into the New Testament, though.
Well, as our time is running out, Ron, it seems like that to make the Israelites a kingdom of priests and a holy nation, God was going to have to keep them as separate from other people as possible.
Well, that's right. God had to teach them humility and to be a holy people. Furthermore, to keep them from lapsing into idolatry, they were going to have to live apart from the other nations. Moreover, they were going to have to offer regular sacrifices of animals that they had worshipped as gods in Egypt. In other words, every time they sacrificed these animals, it symbolized them killing one of the false gods. Scott Hahn has said of this, these special requirements imposed on the Israelites, quote, "These laws might have looked like a punishment, but God was still a loving father to his people. Like a loving father, he did not merely punish his people for what they had done wrong. He gave them laws to help them rehabilitate them. In the same way, our own parents would tighten the rules when we got into serious trouble. Not because they had stopped loving us, because they wanted to keep us from getting into trouble again." End of quote.
That okay. End. Well, we're coming to the end of the program, Ron, and I'd never heard about that. They were encouraged or commanded to offer the very gods, or the type of animals, which gods they had adored, calves and bulls and things like that.
Well, you might recall during the 10 plagues, each of these represented basically one of the gods too, the death of one of the Egyptian gods.
Okay.
To the Egyptians, not to the Israelites.
Well, and God was trying, as you said so nicely at the end, to rehabilitate them, not just to punish them, to help them to learn and give them stricter rules and guidelines to go by. Well, to our listening audience, we say, may God bless you all, always, and in all ways.